Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Musings on Golf, where today you'll hear compelling stories from Renee Powell, the second African-American woman to play on the LPGA Tour, and truly one of golf's great ambassadors. My name is Kelly Elbin, along with my buddy Bob Bupka. Hey, Robert, in addition to Renee, we're looking forward to the return of Tiger and Charlie later this week at the PNC Championship. And we have some thoughts on Jon Rahm and LIV Golf. Still a lot going on in golf for December. How you doing? What's going on with you?
Doing great. And just as a listener alert, you're going to want to listen to Renee Powell, one of the inspirational stories in all of golf, what she had to go through, what her father had to go through. And she has come out just absolutely fantastic. Matter of fact, a member of the RNA, and, you know, not many females get to be members of the RNA. Renee Powell certainly earned that title. And you're right about strong field of names at the PNC. Tiger and Charlie, you know, fourth appearance. They finished second last year. And if you listen to the pre-tournament hype, they would have to be the favorites this year. I'm not so sure that'll be the case when reality comes. But a good show, a good Musings on Golf coming our listeners' way this week.
Yeah, so a couple of things. I got to know Renee Powell very well during my years at the PGA of America. And her passion for the game of golf is so strong, and has, you know, and she got it from her dad. Her dad started, or he started playing when he was a young man, as we'll find out in the interview. As you'll find out, Renee started even younger, and in her very first event, she wasn't exactly playing among girls, but she has gone on to, and continues to, Bob, give back to the game, to veterans like her father was. Certainly the accolades at the home of golf are quite amazing. And yeah, you mentioned about the field for the PNC Championship. I tell you what, people are going to tune in for Tiger and Charlie, no question. But you look at, you got John Daly and his son, Vijay Singh, who won last year, and his son, Annika and her son, Nick Price, Steve Stricker, Justin Leonard, Nick Faldo, Nelly Korda, JT and his dad. This is really a reason to watch golf. It's pretty cool. And I know that defending champions are the Singhs. John Daly and his son won in 2021. You've got a good John Daly story, I think.
When I think of John Daly, I have many stories, but one that I really get a chuckle at, you know, each year at the Masters down at Hooters, he has a John Daly trailer that sells merchandise and T-shirts, and he autographs them. And it's really quite a spectacle, because you never think you're going to see a professional golfer, especially the stature of John Daly, outselling his T-shirts. But he was doing his business. I happened to be in the parking lot, and all of a sudden this car crashes into the back end of the trailer, and the lady gets out and says, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I got so excited. I saw John Daly standing there, and I lost control of the car." We both said, John and I both said, "Boy, we could have got run over in the parking lot while covering the Masters, but at the Hooters parking lot, not at Augusta National."
Right, and the excitement for a guy who's not even in the Masters field, right? He, like Tiger, he transcends the game, doesn't he?
Oh, he's amazing, amazing. Very kind-hearted guy. I mean, yeah. I've known John a long time. He's remarkable what he did. I mean, you know, you win the PGA and you win the Open Championship, you're in a pretty elite class of company that play this professional game.
Hey, Bob, a few things on the Jon Rahm departure for LIV. One, Tony Finau said yesterday that he's going to stay on the PGA Tour, and there was some rumors that he might follow that path for Rahm. So I know there's some calm feelings a little bit among the leaders at the PGA Tour. But you know, there's just so much disarray right now with the PGA Tour. There's so much uncertainty. And frankly, I think there's a lot of uncertainty with LIV Golf. I mean, not that many people are really watching it. The Saudis obviously throwing a lot of money around. And $300 million, which is what has been reported that Rahm's taken, clearly the money was a massive factor. And I think my guess is he felt, look, both sides are kind of in flux right now. How about if I just take this money and perhaps things are going to work themselves out anyway. And, you know, I'll get back on tour one day. You've got the PGA Tours in negotiations with the Strategic Sports Group, which is headlined by John Henry and the group that owns both the Boston Red Sox and Liverpool football club. You've also got Arthur Blank, who owns the Atlanta Falcons. Home Depot founder is part of that group. So they're in negotiations there. Are they going to be able to close the deal with the Saudis by December 31st? Still a lot of questions in golf. And I'm not saying he's right, not saying he's wrong, but I certainly can understand why, you know, John Rahm kind of did an about face and took the money.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, Kelly. And, you know, if you step back and just look at it through the lenses of John Rahm, this sets him up not only for himself, his family, his future families. You know, that's a lot of money. And John Rahm, I think, deep down inside, felt a little disrespected. You know, everybody was talking about Rory. Everybody was talking about Tiger. Rahm didn't seem to have too loud a voice at that table. So he says, hey, wait a minute. They don't need me. And, hey, if another organization wants to give me that kind of money, in all good conscience, I have to take that money, and I don't fault him for doing it.
No, I agree with you. I think that did play a role. I don't know that that'll ever be said, but I think your point is a very valid one. And there certainly it's a leverage play by the Saudis. And look, again, Bob, we've talked about this. It's been talked about a long time since the Saudis came on board. Golf is not big enough, Bob, to have two groups competing for the eyeballs. It doesn't work that way. It's why we have just the NFL. It's why we have Major League Baseball. They're the strong entity. Golf needs one strong entity that appeals to fans, that has the best players on a regular basis. Let's hope it gets worked out, but I'm not sure that it will, at least in the short term. I hope it does, but I don't see anything that's going to close the deal by December 31st.
Yeah, but you know, the way these things have been going for it seems like an eternity now, but every day you go to bed and you think, oh, this looks really grim, and then the next morning a bit of good news comes out and you feel better, and then you hear some bad news, and you know, it's bouncing back and forth. Who knows what's going to happen? I'm kind of interested, you know, the tour now has somebody else to negotiate with besides Piff, but Piff has, you know, as rich as those guys are that you mentioned, you know, the guys that own the Falcons, the guys that own the Red Sox, you know, they got deep pockets, but they don't have the pockets of Piff. So if it comes down to strictly money, I think Piff will win out, but who knows? And hopefully we'll get some sort of resolution, Kelly. And this is my wish for the new year. And wish for everybody that loves golf, we get this resolved, we get it back to highly competitive golf amongst the best players in the world, on the best golf courses in the world, in the best events in the world.
Yeah, well said. Agree with you completely. And when it comes to the best and top, Renee Powell is as good as it gets. You'll hear from her in just a second. Bob, you and I talked with her yesterday, and her story is so strong, and what she continues to do in this game that she loves. You know, you hear about all this money, this $300 million. It's at the elite level of tour players. But doggone it, when it comes to passion and love for the game, it's the Renee Powells of the world who drive our game, who make it so special for so many people.
Very well said, Kelly, and I guarantee you people are going to enjoy our conversation with Renee Powell.
And you'll hear it right after these messages. What's the perfect gift for the golfers in your life? a new pair of stylish golf shoes from William & Harry. Just slip on the WH waterproof golf shoes and experience the ultimate in comfort and performance. These fantastic golf shoes are crafted with deerskin and suede. They have a form-fitted inner lining and reinforced hardened soft spikes on the outside. Visit williamandharry.com and give the gift of William & Harry this holiday season.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, our special guest today, is one of golf's great ambassadors. Yes, she was the second African-American woman to play on the LPGA Tour. Yet the story of Renee Powell extends well beyond her playing days. Hers is a story of perseverance, a unique golf course, powerful commitment to our veterans, and being honored multiple times at the home of golf. Renee Powell, LPGA PGA professional, welcome to Musings on Golf.
Well, thank you. Great to be with you.
Renee, it's really an honor to speak to you. When I look back at all that you've accomplished, there are not enough words in the dictionary to compliment you adequately. But I'm going to throw you a little curveball because the last couple of days been thinking about the situation with Tiger and his son, Charlie. Do you think Tiger's on the right course with him, or is he expecting too much or expecting not enough? Or what is your opinion?
Well, I don't know. I mean, just as an outsider looking, it looks like they're having a great time. It looks like his son, Charlie, he's really embraced who his dad is. And he seems to love the game. I mean, he walks like his dad. He acts like his dad. You know, the mannerisms. It's sort of cute to watch. So just as an outsider and looking in, it looks like they are really enjoying each other. And Tiger seems to be being a great father.
Yeah, the only thing that upsets me, like his high school, they won the state championship. The headlines come out, Tiger Woods' son Charlie wins a state championship, which he did, but he finished 26th in that event. I mean, you know, and that's never mentioned. I know he's great. I know there's a lot of people that say, oh, he's going to win many times on the PGA Tour. I'm not so certain about that because you probably know as well as anybody, it takes a hell of a lot more than talent to win on the PGA Tour.
Well, it does. But then we have to look at it. That's the media writing up what they're writing. So it's not what either one of them are really saying.
No, that's a good point. And I have to do that. You know, you've dealt with so much adversity in your career. And I know your dad, Bill, as I understand it, it was even tougher on him, especially his story with World War II. He was very, very resilient, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't know how people in that generation dealt with what they did. As my dad served for several years during World War II. He served over in Scotland and England. And the sad thing, when I think about it, you know, he came back and he had started playing golf when he was 9. So he had played golf long before he went to World War II. There were a lot of issues as a person of color playing the game of golf back in those days. But when he came back home out of the war, the sad thing is, he was fighting for his country. He came back home. You know, there were such things as GI loans and GI bills, but they were only for white soldiers. Black soldiers were not entitled to receive the GI loan or GI bill, not even to buy a house.
Wow.
And that's very sad. So, but yet and still, my dad still, you know, talk about being resilient. He still had an idea that he loved the game of golf. His whole thing was to create opportunities for everybody to play the game. You know, and back during that time, and we had two separate armies. We had a black army and a white army. And it wasn't until President Truman integrated our armed forces that things began to change.
Well, I know one thing. If I was in the army back then, I would have preferred to be in the black army. they're a lot stronger and smarter than a lot of people I know. Your dad started you early. You came into the game at 3 years old. I understand you played your first tournament at 12 years old. What do you remember about that event?
Well, you know, it was very interesting because, yes, my dad put a golf club in my hand when I was three. The golf club, which I still have today.
That's cool.
Yeah, a little small for me. It was a wooden head club, steel shaft, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing was that my dad was preparing me to play in a junior tournament, which was in July when I played my very first tournament. It was over the 4th of July. It was in Cleveland, Ohio. And I actually was put into the women's division. I was 12. I was put in the women's division because I didn't know anything about competition. I had no clue what competition was. So I think my dad was pretty good when it came to psychology, I think, because he wanted to make sure I was toughened up, that I understood. And the funny thing that these women that I played with, they were like the age of my parents. and they certainly didn't want to get beaten by a little skinny 12-year-old. And so as we played, they would talk about things like, I remember them saying, and they would say these things out loud. And they'd say, well, on the third hole of that golf course, there was a pond. And so they talked about, oh, well, we should just throw her in the pond. And they were saying it loud enough for me to hear this, right?
Wow.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going to try to throw me in a pond. I can't even swim. but what I did remember is my dad always said, if you get them one down, get them two down, get them two down, get them three down. And that's all the things that kept going through my head. I just have to beat these women. So that was, my very first golf tournament. And I was in, they had different divisions. And so I actually won my division. But these women eventually, they became great fans of mine, you know, over the years. But it was really interesting meeting them for the first time, playing in this event with them and beating them.
And right after that event, you said to your dad, could you give me swimming lessons, please? I may need them. Hey, listen, one other thing, Renee. I understand you had some difficulty once on boarding a bus and your dad came in and intervened with the driver. Do you recall that?
Oh, I recall it very well. I actually went to school for 3 years in my area here. And the third grade was really when I discovered racism and prejudice and segregation, because I had, and everything always happened normally happened on the playground with me, but I had two really good friends that I played on the playground with every day. And they walked towards me, I remember, and they said, well, we can't play with you anymore. And I said, why not? And they said, because our parents said so, because you're colored. Because at that time, the word was colored for us, right?
Sure.
So the third grade as an 8-year-old was the worst year of my entire educational life. And so eventually, my parents then worked. They took me out of the school in my neighborhood. And where my mom and his kids were Catholic. And our church had a school. And so the priest recommended that I, you know, to see they could send the bus out far enough to pick me up so that I could then go to school at my church, St. Benedict's. And I had this little incident. And so the bus driver decided, I got on the bus and the bus driver said, well, I'm not going to move the bus until you go to the back of the bus. Well, I knew not to go to the back of the bus, and all the kids started laughing at me. And so I went to the middle of the bus. And when I got home, I told my mom about it. My mom called the priest and talked to him about the incident. And he told my mom that he didn't have time to talk to her, and he hung up the phone on her. My dad was out working on the golf course, came in. My mom related what had happened to with the conversation with the priest. My dad immediately, and I remember, picked up the keys. He had been out on the golf course. He was all muddy, picked up the car keys, drove in to see the priest. And my dad was not Catholic. And so he knocked on the door. Father Otto came to the door, and my dad told him who he was and what had happened. And Father said to my dad, well, I didn't have time to talk to your wife, and I don't have time to talk to you either. And he closed the door.
Whoa.
And my dad just opened the door, walked back, and said that he and Father sat in the kitchen table and sat down and talked, and they had a very good understanding by the time my dad left.
Oh, you had a great father, no doubt.
I mean, had an opportunity to meet your dad before he passed away. I am sure he made it very clear to get that understanding. Right, Renee?
You're absolutely right.
Hey, we're so pleased to be joined by PGA and LPGA professional Renee Powell here on Musings on Golf. Okay, so Renee, you played in 250 LPGA events. I suppose the obvious question is, you know, what was that like to be at that time? And I know Althea Gibson was out playing as well, but one of two African-Americans playing on the LPGA Tour, what was that experience like? And were there others on the tour who befriended you, who sort of helped pave the road a bit for you in terms of easing things?
Well, Kelly, I think my very first major national tournament was the USGA Junior Girls Championship. Yeah. And at the time I met a lot of other players, girls who had aspirations of eventually going to college and playing collegiate golf and then playing on the tour. So I ended up playing golf with many players my age who we played collegiate golf against each other, and then we were on tour together. So it was when I went on tour, then I knew a lot of the people. I actually played whenever there were tournaments, LPGA tournaments near me, like in Ohio or in Michigan or neighboring states. They always invited, you know, a couple of players to amateurs to play, and I played in got invitations to play in those events. So I knew a lot of the players before I went on tour. But also back in those days, and it was like 1967 when I first went on tour. So, you know, if we look back into to our history, what was going on, it was a very tumultuous time in our country. And so there were a lot of challenges, certainly not with the players on tour, but outside the tour, there was a lot that was going on.
What were some of the specifics? What were some things that you had to deal with?
Oh, wow. Housing situations. You know, like a lot of times, often they might lose my reservation hotels and motels. Or there were times when Center Post and I was a Canadian player, and we actually met at that very first USGA Junior Girls tournament. We ended up rooming together a lot on tour, and we would go to restaurants, and oftentimes they would serve everybody else around us but not serve us, so we would just get up and leave. You know, there were death threats. There were times when they had problems of wanting to allow me into the locker rooms because they didn't think I was a player, and I would have my colleagues would have to come to my defense all the time. So there were things that all the other players on tour were not going through that I was going through quite often.
It just makes your story even that more amazing. And we're so proud and honored to have Renee Powell with us here on Musings on Golf. How well did you know the legendary tennis star, Althea Gibson?
Well, you know, I it was funny because I first met Althea when I was playing amateur golf. There were tournaments. I don't know how familiar you are with the UGA, United Golfers Association, which was an organization that was formed back in, I think, 1926, because there were not places where Black people were able to play tournaments. There were generally about two in most cities, maybe two golf courses that were municipal courses, which allowed you to play. But this organization, it was a national organization, and the first time Althea had stopped playing tennis, she was doing some tours to around the country and exhibitions. She'd come to Canton, Ohio, and my dad had taken me to hopefully try to meet her. And by the time she finished and we went to try to catch her backstage, she'd gone. The following year, I was playing in a tournament in Boston, Massachusetts, and it was a UGA tournament. It was back in 1960. And who was I paired with? But I was paired with Althea Gibson, wow, of all people. Yeah. And so that's when I first met Althea. And then actually I got to know Althea over the years on tour. And, we would have breakfast or dinner sometime or just chat about things. Because she was very, she was sort of helpful in a way. I mean, she was great to talk to, and we would share experiences. And she would say to me how fortunate I was to have parents that were supporting me as they did. I think she said she was on her own from the time that she was 14 years old. Wow. So I did get a chance to know Althea. And then even afterwards, after she left the tour, we stayed in touch. And I would call her occasionally, and we would chat.
All right, Renee, for those who have never played at Clearview Golf Club in East Canton, where there are reports that sometimes you could be seen on a tractor yourself, what is the mission of the club? And did I hear right that you don't even have an irrigation system?
We don't have an automatic irrigation system, no. The golf course was built back in 1946 by my dad because, he actually started the first golf team at the high school he was at in a town called Minerva, Ohio, which is 10 miles from where we live. And their family was the only Black family in the entire town. My dad would schedule the matches. And after high school, he wasn't welcome at the same area golf courses that they played as part of the team. So he had built up this love of the game of golf. So when he came back from World War II, during the war, he was able to play golf over in Scotland and England. But when he came back, he still wasn't welcome at the area golf courses. So his idea was to create opportunities for people to find some way to build a golf course. He didn't know how he was going to do that, but he knew that it was something that he felt very strongly about, regardless of the color of your hair, your skin, your religion, your gender. You know, and back in those days, women were not very welcome on golf courses, and either were youth, and certainly people of color weren't welcome. So my dad's whole thing was, he always talked about opportunities, creating opportunities. So that was the whole thing, is to create a facility, a golf course that would allow everybody to participate and to play the beautiful game of golf.
How many rounds a year do you do at Clearview now?
Oh, not nearly enough. I mean, and we're, we just really have to, we create golf leagues and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And still we're in an area, we're not in a, you know, golf has never been a big minority oriented sport. And certainly in the area where we live, I mean, when I tell you that they had to take me out of school, because of the attitude in our area. It's been building up and building up. And I think that as we've gotten more national coverage in a sense But we've created our own leagues, you know, with people with do a lot with women, do a lot with youth, and do a lot with veterans.
Yeah, you do. And we're so pleased to be joined by Renee Powell here on Musings on Golf. You certainly do with veterans. You know, the PGA of America, I know you're a very proud member of the association, and PGA Hope has been on the radar now for several years and, you know, helping our Patriots everywhere. But Renee, in Clearview Hope precedes that in terms of what you did to help female veterans, women veterans. What was the impetus for that? I believe back in 2011, was it local women who you felt needed help, and golf was sort of the opportunity?
Well, you know, as I said, my dad was a WW2 veteran. I actually, along with Mary Lou Crocker, we played on the tour together. We also met back in that USGA Junior Girls Tournament back many years ago. But we actually had an opportunity to go to Vietnam in 1971 during the war with USO. So, you know, veterans have always been very, very close to my heart. And, you know, the PGA, I'm not sure what year the PGA actually started the Hope program, but a good friend of mine and a friend of yours, Bob Denny, contacted me and said, Renee, there are no golf programs for women military veterans. You should think about starting one. And that's actually how it got started. And so, but it was so interesting because I knew that a lot of people have gone to war from the state of Ohio. You know, we're not a huge state, but a lot of people have spent time in the military, both men and women. And so when I sought out to try to find women, it was very interesting because a lot of women didn't even admit that they were veterans. And I would say, really? did you not sign on the dotted line and go where we had our country sent you? And yeah, they said yes. And I'm like, well, you're a veteran. And it's because of how they were treated. You know, it's the same thing like when Mary Lou and I had gone to Vietnam and come back, and how the veterans and everybody who served in Vietnam, how they were treated. They were treated horribly. Well, women were treated not very nice either, not very kind. And so I think just sort of fade it back into the background and didn't even want to even say anything. So what's been so great about this program is that, you know, it has saved lives. I mean, we've had women that have been suicidal and been in hospitals, and the golf program has been really great. Women have said, you know, we could be, I remember one woman said to me, well, I can be in a room with nothing but women veterans. We don't have to say anything because we all understand each other, because there have been so many horrible things that have happened to them also among their male counterparts in the military. So it's been, you know, I feel that the one thing that I can do, I have talent in golf, I can share that. And I feel so strongly that, you know, the only reason that we can live in peace and freedom in the United States of America is because of our military, our strong military. And it's not just the men, it's the women too. So, I mean, it's the one thing that I can offer. The one thing that I can do is give the game of golf and the sport of golf, which does so much for so many people. I can give that to our veterans who have served us.
Final question for me, Renee, before I turn it over to Bob to close this out. But not once but twice you've been honored at the Home of Golf over in St. Andrews. How cool has that been? You were one of the first two American women to be given an honorary membership at the Royal and Ancient Golf Club in St. Andrews. And I believe before that you received an honorary doctorate from the University of St. Andrews. That has to rank extraordinarily high on your accomplishments.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, the thing that was so cool and so neat is the fact that I received that honorary doctorate in 2008, and I was able to take my dad over with me. And it was the first time he'd been back to that part of the world, back to Scotland, in 63 years. So it was a great way of me being able to thank my mom and dad for everything that they had done for me. And then in 2016, I think, or 2015, right. 15, they,
yeah.
They decided to, the RNA decided to change the rules and voted to allow women to become members. And so they actually selected seven of us to become the first female members, two of us from the United States. Louise Suggs, who is the oldest, at that time, the oldest living member of the LPG, founder of the LPG, and myself. And then they also, the university has been so kind, and they have a women's golf tournament, and they play for the Rene Powell Cup. And then in 2018, actually, their newest building that they had, they decided to name the Rene Powell Hall. So I have a building named for me at the university. It was the first time in over 600 years that they ever named a building for an American. So I always say that as all of us Americans, we all sort of share, we've got a building over in St. Andrews.
Oh, Rene, awesome. Rene, Rene, that's I awesome. Could listen to you for hours. I got a great trivia question, though. Maybe you don't even know the answer, Rene. What does Ben Franklin and Rene Powell have in common?
Oh my gosh, were we born the same date?
No.
I mean, not the same birth date, but the same day and month? I don't know.
No, and you didn't capture lightning in your golf bag on the golf course. But both of you have a doctorate from St. Andrews University.
That's right.
Okay.
Very good. And that's quite an honor. And it's been quite an honor to have you on the show. I'm going to let Kelly wrap it up because I got little tears in my eyes. You're such an inspiration to so many. And your message should be spread far and wide because your story is a true American story.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I'm blessed. You know, God blessed me with talent to play the game, and my dad developed that talent. And you know, I love the sport of golf. So I'm very fortunate.
Yeah, Renee, as we close, I think you know, I used the word perseverance at the start, and I'm sure you've heard a lot of those adjectives like that. But to have gone through those times and to be positive, it couldn't have been easy. And yet you continue to find a positive way to want to give back and to contribute. Is that part of the nature of your parents, of you, sort of the DNA of the Powell family?
Well, I think so. I think it is part of the DNA of the family, you know, and thinking of what my parents probably had gone through, and they didn't always talk about things, but what they had gone through much earlier than I did. You know, and they never gave up on things. My dad would always say, you know, everybody has adversity in life, but you have to find a way to get to the other side when there's something that's in your way, you know, whether you go over, around, or under, or through, but just get to the other side. And other things, you know, other words of wisdom, like you would say, never to allow anybody to define you as a person, to set goals and for yourself and to gain access to those goals and never give up on life. And so it's just something that, you know, that I don't know, it's just part of who I am. It's part of who my parents were. It's part of who our family is.
That's a great legacy. Rene Powell, thank you so much for joining us here on Musings on Golf. And I know that your story will continue well into the future. We wish you well and Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Thank you so much, Kelly. Great chatting with you. Thank you for having me.
Been a pleasure, Rene.
Thanks, Bob.
What's the perfect gift for the golfers in your life? A new pair of stylish golf shoes from William & Harry. Just slip on the WH waterproof golf shoes and experience the ultimate in comfort and performance. These fantastic golf shoes are crafted with deerskin and suede. They have a form-fitted inner lining and reinforced hardened soft spikes on the outside. Visit WilliamAndHarry.com and give the gift of William and Harry this holiday season. You know, Bob, she's been honored, as we heard from the folks at the RNA and at St. Andrews, and yet Renee Powell continues to be this grounded woman who gives back to the game on a daily basis. What a special interview. What a special person.
Yeah, that was a sheer pleasure. And I'm sure our listeners of Musings on Golf enjoyed our visit with Renee Powell. How about next week? Another powerhouse female, none other than Susie Whaley. Boy, what a great person she is. I've had the pleasure and pride of knowing Susie pretty well. And every time I walk away with a greater sense of admiration for all that she's achieved, first female president of the PGA of America, amongst other things, that's going to be a Jim Dandy.
Sure will be. Teed it up in the Greater Hartford Open, the second woman to play in a PGA Tour event, and certainly her own brand, if you will. Susie Whaley has contributed so much to the game, and really looking forward to hearing from her the next week. We thank Renee Powell for her time and her wonderful insights. Look forward to Susie Whaley next week. We're Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin, signing off once again, Musings on Golf.